We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Shane, let's go.
Before we talk with Mr. Handsome, Joe Cali, people are texting in talking about another word that I think gets way too much attention when we talk about sports is the concept of team chemistry. Someone said locker rooms will always have that in-house behavior. If you're thoughtfully trying to build a productive locker room, would you leave out someone that could immediately divide it? Richie Incognito was on a playoff team last year. This idea of distraction. Thomas Jones punched Cedric Benson in the face. The Bears still went to the Super Bowl. If you're not down with Kaepernick, I'm not telling you to be. Think what you want. I just think that some of the excuses that you make to justify your decision are ridiculous. From a sports standpoint, I think they're ridiculous. Now it's time to talk with Mr. Handsome. Joe Cali covers the Bulls for the Chicago Sun-Times. After we booked him, I was like, I feel bad. We should have done this earlier so that Joe could watch LeBron do LeBron-type things, which LeBron is out there doing. Joe Cali now joins me here on The Score. What's up, Joe?
What's up, ladies, love?
I'm just sitting here chilling, man. I'm glad that we got the chance to talk, man. I was like, man, last week during the draft lottery stuff, I wanted to pick your brain so bad. So let's start there.
Okay.
What was the reaction amongst the folks at the Bulls when they didn't get lucky this time with the ping pong balls?
It depends who you talk to. I mean, Pax kind of, you know, was realist and put in perspective. Michael Reinsdorf, obviously not happy, not thrilled. I don't think he was expecting to jump into number one, but I think he was hoping for some good things, not to get knocked back one. Especially with a team that they know is shopping in the same aisle as they do in Sacramento, not only jumping them, but jumping way up. So, that's the difference between can you grab does a Michael Porter Jr. somehow slide you, or do you look at Wendell Carter and go, I guess we'll take him? I mean, so, you know, dropping back that one spot could be a big difference. You know, again, it depends how things go. It depends how much they waive that second first-round pick out there, if they could possibly move one or two spots up, if there's a team that is interested in just multi-picks and doesn't really love someone at five or six. So, I think for Michael Reinsdorf, it was kind of a kick between the legs.
Where do the Bulls think they are in their rebuild?
Well, I mean, they think that this rebuild is a little bit different than some. I mean, this isn't the process. This is definitely something different because you had such a quick reboot and a quick jump start. They like what they saw in Chris Dunn. Too bad it was cut short with injuries. Zach LaVine, they need to see some big things from him this summer. But, you know, I've already talked to a couple people, and privately, I think they are going to try building this thing around Lowry. I think we saw that the last couple weeks of the season when Chris and Zach were out. A lot of the offense was going through Lowry. They liked what they saw. They understand the mismatch that he is. And I think they're saying basically, okay, you know, we've got our athlete, we've got our point guard, but the special guy that is a mismatch problem and has opposing coaches actually watching extra film is marketing and what he brings. So I think you're going to see it this summer is more about, yes, getting those three to play together, but also having them understand that, you know, the offense, ideally, there's ball movement in Fred Hoiberg's offense, so it's not like, you know, you're just going to see ISO with Markkanen. But if that ball movement ends in Markkanen's hands and making sure he's in the spots they want him on the floor, you're going to see him shoot a lot. So, you know, I feel like they think they're in a little different spot than the maybe most of those top teams in the top 10. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, if you look, there's teams like Atlanta has a couple nice pieces. Now, who do they add? You know what I mean? So there's other teams that have a couple nice pieces that you would say, yeah, they're not much different than the Bulls, but the Bulls feel like they're a little bit different because their pieces have a little more experience.
Am I naive to think that some of the up-and-down play from Zach LaVine was a guy who was trying to figure out what he could and couldn't do on his knee?
No, I don't think that's naive. I think that's pretty sensible. The concerns I think they had with Zach were the way he played with Lowry. They wanted to see more of a give and take, specifically that Minnesota game. And I understand there was emotion in that game. That became just a Wild West, an old-fashioned Jimmy Butler stare down with Zach LaVine and those two going at it in the fourth quarter. So I had no problem with that. That's just one that kind of jumps out of the top of my head. And then obviously defensively, they need to see him understand things a little bit better. And off the floor, they need him to understand that he was brought here to be a leader, but not a dicky leader. They don't need that right now. And he had to be talked to a couple times about that let's not get into that. We're not here big leaguing people because you have a couple more years than a lot of these other guys. So I think they, you know, he had a couple different people pull him aside and say, you know, it's not there yet, but you're falling into some habits that kind of have us a bit nervous. So let's clean that up. So, you know, I think those are the big things. Those are the main things that they'd like to see him clean up. But, you know, and we'll see if he's a willing participant this summer. I think they already have scheduled 3 meetings. They're 3 gatherings, let's call them, because of the NBA rules. You can't technically have something, but at least 3 gatherings where guys are all going to get together. One of them is definitely going to be out in LA, so that'll keep Zach happy. And then they'll take it from there. But there's definitely 3 blocks where everyone will get together and run and see how this thing works out.
Joe Calley of the Sun-Times joining me here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at Sun-Times_Hoops. What do the Bulls need? Don't tell me like a player, but if you're drawing this up, what makes sense for them to try and add if everything was perfect?
A 2-way small forward. That's it. Jimmy Butler. How's that? They need to add Jimmy Butler back. No, I mean, they need a guy who can give them some scoring, is that wing guy offensively, but they need a dig-in guy defensively. And if you're gonna, you know, say they don't grab that big guy, and it's Robin Lopez. They love the way he plays behind the guys defensively. A little physicality, you know. He's not the greatest one-on-one defender with bigs, but he plays them physical. Good team defender, great communicator. So I think they're fine with that. But if you're gonna put Zach out there and have Lowry out there, and this, no offense, because I think Lowry's defense was better than I expected, and better than they even expected. But if you're going to put Zach out there, you need that other wing player that, okay, you got Chris pressuring and picking up full, which they'd like to see him more, you know, pick up further off on the ball. But then they need that guy that's going to stop that elite wing, and they don't have anything like that right now. So, you know, to me, that on the top of the shopping list is a 2-way small forward would be ideal. Now, I mean, if that's Bridges, if that's Porter Jr., I think they would be thrilled if they end up with either one of those. Obviously, I think that they feel Porter Jr. is a little more special because his offensive mentality and his offensive IQ is off the charts before the injury. Kevin Durant-like as far as his ability to score from everywhere. And I'm not saying he's Kevin Durant. I'm saying he's got that kind of mentality where he can shoot from 3, has a mid-range game, which a lot of kids don't have anymore, but can also take you to the rack, and he's 6'10". So, you know, I think that'd be their ideal guy.
Going into last season, I wasn't sure if you had a coach in Fred, that maybe this was right. A guy that things were over his head. I walked away after last season feeling more comfortable with Fred. You're around him every day. Can Fred coach at this level?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think he has, you know, I don't want to say he's grown into that role. I think he's got a team that's allowed him to become more comfortable coaching. You know, he inherited an insane asylum that first year. So scrap that first year. Then the second year he goes into it, and you know he bent a lot to what Jimmy and Dwayne wanted, and Rondo to a certain extent, and rightfully so. And he was harder on the young guys year two. He let the veterans kind of have their say and their go, and you know understood that veterans have that kind of presence in the locker room. I don't think he let things get out of control with the veterans, but he definitely let them bounce ideas off him and took their ideas. This year I think he was able to embrace the full coaching experience. Get back to teaching, which he really likes, and obviously that college background. You know, he's still kind of the shooting guru and worked on a lot of guys with the shots. Look, everybody had career years besides, I think, Zipser and Felicio. And so of the young guys that returned under him. So I think that says something that there is development. There is player development. Is it what fans expect or like? You know, that's for them to judge. But I definitely think that we saw that guys were listening to him, guys fought, guys were competitive, guys won some games they shouldn't have won. I think they feel comfortable that, you know, third year into this contract, you have two more years to continue to prove yourself, which I still think he needs to do. But, you know, I definitely think he's trending in the right direction. Is he a top five elite coach? No. But, you know, there's about five or six of those. And then there's a whole big middle ground, and then there's five really bad NBA coaches. So, you know, I definitely think Fred is working his way up in that second tier.
I want to spend a little bit of time on Lauri Markkanen because I loved watching him play. And it looked like, and I'm not there every day, but from the first time I saw him until the end of the season, it looked like he had been on an NBA weightlifting program, that he got man shoulders by the time the season ended. Where can he improve and what do they want him to do?
Well, you the body first and foremost. I mean, he's got that. You know, he looks like kind of one of those SEC receivers that you see as like a junior, where he's got that V build, and you know you can add a lot to it and sculpt it. And you know, he's not your typical Euro. I mean, the way he's built, the way he plays, the physicality he plays, he surprised me. You know, I mean, I saw a lot of him in Arizona, and I saw a guy just kind of standing out there, but that was the offense. Which is the problem in evaluating these college guys, is you have these coaches that are so hands-on at the college level. But, you know, DeAndre Ayton, I mean, is he something special? I mean, you look at the build, the man, and you say, wow, that physically he should be doing more. Why isn't he? Is it him? Is it the system? Is it, you know, what they want to run? And, you know, Lauri even says, they wanted me just to stand outside and shoot threes. And it was frustrating, but, you know, that's what they wanted. So I definitely think the body and the physicality – is atop the list of things that they're gonna work on first with Lauri. He's already been back once he took about 3 weeks off, didn't touch a ball. He came back. From all accounts, the people I talked to, he was ridiculous. I mean, I think they said there may have been five balls the entire, you know, 4 days he was there that he missed. So he was shooting lights out, obviously, and then there was a lot of weight work. So that's what they, first and foremost, that's what they want to see with him. They want to see him bulk up and you know, understand that he's going to be bumped more, he's going to be hit more, and become even more of a post presence. So they want that complete game from him.
Was there anyone at the combine that stood out for any reason, physical or interview wise?
I mean, from what I saw, you know, I wasn't at the combine. I was dealing with Little League stuff. From what I saw, from watching the tape and watching the coverage and stuff like that, I think the guys that were there to talk to teams all came away leaving an impression and, you know, a good impression. I know the Bulls wanted to get their hands on a certain amount of guys and did. I think Grayson Allen, as scary as it sounds, because the Bulls do have 22, and all of a sudden you start matching up and see, let's see. He's an experienced guy from Duke. That checks two of Gar Foreman's boxes. He's a shooter, check another box, and then he showed – a above average athleticism and all the combine workout stuff, better than McDermott did, definitely. So you check some more boxes. And so is that a guy that kind of jumps on their radar screen now at 22? So I think he really kind of helped himself in talking to Bulls people after. A lot of people were impressed with Mo Bamba. I don't know if he's going to be there, but impressed with his attitude in understanding personnel already of who's on a team, how that team functions, how he can help that team function even better. That was pretty impressive from the interview process from the Bulls people I talked to. So, those are the two biggest things I took away as far as big time, as far as winners in the eyes of the Bulls, were what Grayson Allen did and also Mo Bamba.
So, Joe, I have this Hawk Solo bobblehead doll. It's Hawk Harrelson as Han Solo.
Okay, who's Chewie? Is there a Chewie in there?
There's no Chewie.
Wimpy? Wimpy? They couldn't put a big Chewie outfit on Wimpy?
That would have been hilarious had they done that.
Yeah, that would have been great.
They should have thought about that. That would have been top-notch. Do you think that Hawk has ever watched Star Wars?
Wow. Let me see. So it came out in the 70s, and he was in leisure suits and probably throwing back a lot back then. I'm going to say, yeah, because you know what? I mean, yeah, he was probably like in Boston or something, and some girl wanted to go on a date, and he wanted to go see Star Wars. And I'm going to say he saw Star Wars.
Okay.
Yes.
So not like Empire, Return of the Jedi, but maybe late 70s, he maybe goes out and sees the actual Star Wars movie.
Yeah, just because there was a lot of buzz about it. He was a man about town. And I'm going to say he saw Star Wars.
Okay. I think that is a good, fair assessment by you.
I mean, you can't like be like, hey, Hawk, did you think Boba Fett's death was like really just stupid? I mean, he's not going to know what you're talking about then. But I think you could say, hey, you know who Luke Skywalker is? And he'd be like, I'll tell you what. I taught Luke Skywalker how to use that lightsaber.
Right. Like, I can't ask him about Tatooine, but...
No, you can't go into detail. You got to ask, like, very generic, kind of like you would ask, like, your grandpa-type question. Yeah. But I'm going to guess he saw it. I mean, there's so many Hawk stories, and you don't know what's real or not real anymore, and... Then you ask people, and they're like, yeah, he got his clothes torn off just going from the bus to the door when he returned to Boston. I'm like, really? Yeah, the fans there loved him. They ripped his clothes off.
Wow. I was up in your neck of the woods last week, man.
Why don't you give me a yell?
I you know what? Honestly, like, until you got on the show, I didn't even think about it. But I was up in Minneapolis for a few hours. I drove down to Winona. I had myself a good time. Ate pizza in St. Paul.
What were you doing?
I had a friend who graduated from St. Mary. So me and the wife, when we flew into Minnie, drove down to Winona and then came back and hung out. Had a great donut at some place called Glam Doll Donuts.
It's a clean living up here. Isn't it?
You're not lying, man. I got to tell you, one of the things I remarked to Mel as I was driving, I was like, the air up here is really clean.
It is. It's pollen-filled right now, as you can tell from my allergy voice. But, yeah, it's if you'd have told me, 14, 15 years ago or 20 years ago when I was coming from Cleveland, I'd be having a place in Chicago and Minnesota. I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah, well, I might have to look into some summer house stuff.
Yeah, you got a lot of real estate. You got, like, house in Hawaii, Arizona. You own a house that Herb lives in. I heard all about it. You're like a slumlord, I heard.
That's not true. Okay, it's a little true.
It's a little true. It's all right. There's a lot of money to be made in slumlordery.
Yes. I've heard that is the case. Joe, as usual, it's a treat to talk to you. And I'll try to be more present around Bulls so I can hang out with you.
Yeah, well, last time you were there, you narked me out. I got a call the next day. Hey, I heard you got a man bun. I don't want to say who it was, a little birdie. I said, I know the birdie. I know the light-skinned birdie that went and told you that, Jason Goff. I know who told you that.
I saw the man bun from, like, 15 rows up. I was like, what's my man doing?
Hey, that's my midlife crisis, man.
Nothing wrong with that. Be well, man. Stay well, and I'll see you soon.
All right, we'll talk soon, brother.
It's Joe Cowley. I love Joe Cowley. In Hawk voice. All right, so Doug Glanville and Joe Cowley think that Hawk has actually seen a Star Wars movie. Shane, is there any chance that Hawk has seen a Star Wars movie?
No.
Herbie?
No, I mean, you got to think about how old he was in, what, the 70s?
Yeah.
The 80s?
Like, I feel like he would say it was nerd stuff.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, no. I was going out in the town.
I was out with women. And yes.
I saw that. It seemed like it melted him. He was like, his hero was on the line. Karl Yastrzemski. Now, if Yaz wouldn't go and see Star Wars, Hawk is in the seat right next to him.
You best damn believe it.
What are they called? Stormtroopers?
Yes.
I tell you what, Stone Pony. These stormtroopers are the most free-swinging stormtroopers I've ever seen.
You know what I learned about stormtroopers in the Star Wars movies? Terrible shots. Just terrible.
It's because they grew up in that Latin America.
Is that why?
Yeah.
That's what Hawk said. Can't walk off the planet. If you need legal advice, by a reputable attorney. Send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz and Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legal advice.
And Lawrence, you said something about Tatooine. That's a planet?
Yes.
All right.
Neither Herb and I have seen them.
That's fine.
I knew it was something because I watched Can't Hardly Wait.
Yes.
And they're talking about Boba Fett and stuff. And then also I've seen, what's that movie with Mel Brooks in it?
Spaceballs.
I've seen that, so I'm good.
Yeah, I. If that is your stance on Star Wars, that you saw Spaceballs, so you're good, I totally respect that.
My favorite part is the brothers with the pick.
I mean, it's great. I don't know if you could make Spaceballs today. Although I will say, there's some stuff in Deadpool where it's questionable.
Ryan Reynolds acting like Ryan Reynolds?
He was born to play Deadpool and nothing else. I got a review on Deadpool, too. I'll give that to you next here on The Score.
Campy, thank you very much. Rick Camp is going to be in here in a few minutes. We'll do a little cross talk with him, get you ready for his show, which is on between 10 and 11 tonight. I am off the next three nights. The next two nights, I will be doing the pre and post game for Cubs-Cleveland. So Ron Coomer's got a couple nights off, so Zach's going to slide down and do the broadcast with Pat. And I am going to take Zach's place, sitting next to Dave Miska on the top row. I haven't been told that I'm going to do any play-by-play, but I will be ready in case that is the case. Although I don't think that is going to be the case. Although it would be fun to get back to doing that with Zach again. We have a good time when we were doing DePaul Bass. The broadcasts were fun. The games, not so much. Our last decade of DePaul basketball has not been fun. But that's not why you called. Deadpool 2 is out. I recommend it. But I did not like it as much as I liked the original. I thought the original was more fun. I thought it was funnier. And I honestly thought that it had a little bit more heart to it, if that's a word one can describe for Deadpool. There were a lot of fun moments and funny moments in the movie. Ryan Reynolds was born to play Deadpool. He's born to play Wade because he's basically playing himself, which is what he's good at. If you're a comic book geek, it's not necessary to enjoy the movie, but you might enjoy it on another level. There's a couple of scenes in an orphanage, and I put air quotes around that. You'll understand when you see it. There is some propaganda on the wall. And if you're a comic book person, you will thoroughly enjoy the propaganda. Thoroughly. I thought Josh Brolin played Cable really well.
Wait, that guy plays Thanos too, right?
They joke about that.
in Deadpool. He makes a joke about it. Zazie Beetz. You're like, is Lawrence just making up words? If you watch Atlanta, Zazie Beetz plays Van, who is Earn's girlfriend. In Deadpool 2, she plays Domino. And she's great. She was so good that I walked out of Deadpool going, I wonder if they would ever do a Domino origin story. Like, could that character hold their own in a standalone movie?
Talking about the Ghetto Jam?
No. Not talking about Sweet Potato. Was that him too, Sweet Potato Pie? Was that Domino?
I think he only had one.
I think Sweet Potato Pie was his song too. I could be wrong, but.
Isn't that John Denver?
No. That was not John Denver. That was West Virginia that you're thinking of. So they did a good job of explaining her powers too, which I was curious about. There's some great winks and nods, which one becomes accustomed to in Deadpool. I like it. I didn't love it, but I wasn't upset. Like, I didn't walk out going, man, I wasted my damn money. Because there have been movies like that. Fantastic Four, Thor 2, Iron Man 3. When you walk out and you go, eh, I would have liked to have saved my $12.
And side note, yes, Sweet Potato Pie and Ghetto Jam, both by Domino.
I told you. If you're going, there is no post-credit scene, so, but there are two post-movie things. If you stick around for the end of credits, there's a great song at the end. There's a bad guy in the movie that I think you're going to love. And if you're old school X-Men, you're really going to love it. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. And it made a boatload of money this weekend, as per usual. I will, again, offer this, and I remember this when I saw the original Deadpool movie. I'm not sure why people are bringing children to Deadpool, but stop. It is really not meant for children. It's an R-rated movie. It is not for kids. I'm not really a clutch the pearls dude. I saw a gang of kids. There must have been like 10 of them. And they had to have been like 7 or younger. I'm sitting there going, what type of parenting is this? You know what goes on in a Deadpool movie? All sorts of stuff. But yes, Zazie Beetz, telling you. If you've been watching Atlanta, you know. But she's fantastic as Domino. It's some really funny. Oh, one more thing. There is a cameo in this movie that you're not going to believe. When it happened, I was like, for real? That's dope. So there, that's my review on Deadpool. My review on tubas, I'll do next with Rick Camp here on The Score.
The White Sox also introduced Luis Robber after he officially signed his $26 million contract. Ken Rosenthal reports 12 and a half of that million will be paid in the first year, and Robber will start in the Dominican League as he hasn't played since last July. Rick Hahn yesterday at the press conference talked about how Marco Patti was so in favor of Robber that he was willing to give up his draft, deal with the consequences, It's not that hard to say, to deal with the consequences.
What is going on?
I don't know. I think I don't know if I like just like had a stroke or something and I didn't know it. But anyway, Marco Patti wanted Robert.
Are you okay?
Man, Shane showing no mercy.
That's fine.
I mean, my goodness, Shane.
I don't want any special treatment. Just, I'm on this side of the glass right now. Treat me like someone else that's on this side of the glass.
Giving this kid the business.
It's one of those make sure you proofread your script type things. Because if I remember right, I had the right idea. I just phrased it so horribly that I couldn't get out of it.
This is how we introduced Rick Camp to the nighttime crew? Jeez. Tough room. Rick Camp spends most of his days listening to Dan Bernstein and Connor McKnight do what they do. You'd also hear him doing updates. You'd also hear him... Don't you do this like early Sunday morning show?
Sometimes. It's like Z-Pak and I
switch off. Like 7 to 8 or seven. Is it
7 to 9, and then you do updates for Hit and Run.
Where Joe yells at you.
He yells at Z-Pak, not really me.
That's good.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do tonight between 10 and 1? 10 and 11, sorry.
Well, the Sox are playing at the moment. NBA is still going on. So, I mean, it lines up perfectly for Cubs. I like Gonzo's column today.
Me too.
About essentially, all right, let's look at what everything is. There's a lot of things that line up positively for the Cubs moving forward, but you have to also look at things that could be lining up negatively. So I kind of want to delve into that a fair amount, see what happens and how some of these games end, because it looks like pretty much everything's going to wrap up in the context of the show.
Which is good, which will give you the opportunity to talk a little, some buckets. And you told me, I didn't know this, that you went and covered the combine, the NBA combine.
Yeah, and I had my first like really odd moment of it. So we were all waiting for Michael Porter Jr. And the way the room is set up is if you just imagine just regular square room on one of the shorter, well, a rectangular room, on one of the shorter walls is where everybody walks in. And in that corner is where Michael Porter Jr. was going to be set up. So he finally gets there. He's talking, which was, you know, maybe not going to happen. And I'm at the back of the scrum because Cody was already further in. So he had a better chance of audio and he fits in those small spaces better than I do.
You're a large man.
I am. I take up a lot of square footage.
You're pulling guard.
Yeah.
At this point. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's what I was in high school when I played football for like 2 months.
It's a smart man who got out of playing football.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I see this guy walk in the room just by himself, a little older guy, like seemed like this guy wouldn't be a beat writer. And then I look close. It's Steve Ballmer.
No way.
Yeah. So Steve Ballmer just kind of strolls in. Nobody really notices because everybody and their brother is listening to Michael Porter Jr.
Meanwhile, there's a billionaire in the room.
Yeah. So he's within probably 5-6 feet of me, just kind of peeks over the shoulder of a camera person. And then I think people started to turn around and realize who was there, and he realized he was being noticed, so he just kind of turned back around and walked out. So now, I believe it was Kevin O'Connor or The Ringer saying, well, the Celtics have, or the Clippers have 12 and 13. He walked in there maybe for a reason, because that was the scheduled time for Michael Porter Jr. to be there. They have ammo to move up. Could that be a target for them if he falls to a certain point?
Do you believe in Michael Porter Jr.'s health?
I have no idea. I don't think there's any way to know for sure. I know it's such a cop out, but for as of course he's being as positive as he can humanly be. He was very, very strong saying, actually, this started in high school. Sophomore year of high school, he initially had an injury and he realized he'd been compensating a little bit. So when this injury happened at Mizzou and he finally gets the surgery, he was like, oh, this is what 100% feels like. That's the way Michael Porter played it off as, okay, now I'm 100%. I didn't know what that was before. I don't know how much you can trust it at this point, especially with him trying to, it sure seems like the more and more, I think the closer and closer we're going to get to the draft, the less and less likely it's going to seem that he'd be there for the Bulls at 7.
Okay. So you think that he will move up the draft board?
Yes.
Who do you like for the Bulls at 7?
I mean, he's the ideal pick.
Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, probably Mikal Bridges. I mean, it does kind of suck to think of, all right, this season of tanking, watching awful basketball for a guy that on your best team is at most third best player, probably more realistically your fourth best player. Like if you think of maybe Robert Covington with more of a shooting conscience, where he's a 3-and-D guy, but Bridges has a better idea of what his role is. Because all the guys that come out of Villanova that have been successful, it seems like one of their biggest attributes is they know what their role is and they're very good at it. They don't try and venture too far out of exactly who they are. And that's just been a Jay Wright staple. They haven't necessarily gotten many stars out of Villanova, but they've gotten a lot of really good role players. And I could see him being that. So while it'd be a tough pill to swallow, if you put him with Markkanen, I don't know what Zach LaVine is. I think his restricted free agency, really any restricted free agent this year, is going to be so interesting because the Bulls committed to him. They said, hey, this is our dude. When they made the deal, they said they're going to re-sign him. But if they really wanted to play hardball, I bet they could get him.
What does he get, $17-20 million a year?
Probably. I mean, if they really wanted to put the screws to him, maybe he would have just say forget it and take the qualifying offer. But if it was fair, just market value, maybe 15, wow. 14, 15. Because, I mean, at this point, I don't know. It's such a varying opinion on him. The high end is some people's, like I know Vincent Goodwill is really high on him, and I really respect Vincent's opinion. He thinks he can be a star, so like that's still in the range of possibilities. I think it maybe is, but I also think he could be a more, like if you said kind of more athletic Jamal Crawford, super sixth man, doesn't play a lick of defense, but can shoot. I would not be shocked at all if that's his best role. Kind of funny, that was more of his role in Minnesota. Hmm. When he was at his best in Minnesota, he was a sixth man, your leading guy on your second unit.
Who was your favorite? Who's your favorite player in the draft? Not for the Bulls, your favorite right, overall.
Favorite overall player? I mean, it kind of is boring to say DeAndre Ayton, but I really think that...
If he's your favorite, he's your favorite.
I think he's going to be really good. Like, what's another thing that's so interesting, I'm most intrigued by Bamba, but I think I like, if I had to bank on one guy making an all-star team at some point, it's DeAndre Ayton.
What do you think of Doncic?
I think he's a guy that could make an all-star team, but I don't think superstar is a possibility. I think secondary piece on a very good team is in the realm of possibility for him. A lot of people that I trust, guys like Sam Vecenie, your guys at Draft Express, they also believe that the shot's going to get the percentages. If you just look at his numbers, not that great shooting wise, but that the skill set projects. Once he gets to the NBA and is able to work on that more, doesn't have quite as much offensive load on him, he'll be able to work on that and get that probably near 40%, which is a great number.
Is there a player in this year's draft that you think is better than what people have him projected as?
A guy that I would not be shocked, and I don't think he'd be a star or anything, but could be much better than where he's projected. Probably Hamidou Diallo from Kentucky.
Okay.
I don't know what to make of any of these Kentucky guys because they were so young, all of them. None of them knew how to play within the context of a system going into Kentucky. So it's hard to think of any of them individually. There was no vet to really base everything off of. There was no baseline for anybody. So it's hard to project anybody into a real role because everybody was figuring it out through the context of the season.
Well, Campy, I'm looking forward to listening to your hour. You'll be on until Les gets in here at 11 o'clock. And I'm looking forward to it being good and being some good basketball talk after the Cavs-Celtics game ends up. Right now, Cleveland with a 98-89 lead with about 6:15 left in the fourth quarter. Thanks to Herb Lawrence and Shane Reardon for their great work on today's show. I am off the next 2 days on assignment. I will be doing Cubs pre and post, so you will be hearing me. You just won't be hearing me in a talk show format. I'm really excited. I'd love your support. If you can listen, that would be great. I'll see you then tomorrow. Cubs pregame with me starts at 5:30 tomorrow right here on The Score. Oh, wait. Before we say goodbye, Shane, I got to tell you about Spot Hero. I actually use Spot Hero quite a bit. I'm going to use it tomorrow morning. I have a meeting down here, and I'm going to use Spot Hero. You should, too. And if you're first time using Spot Hero, download the app, use the code SMART, and you'll get $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. See you tomorrow at 5:30 on Cubs pregame. Bye-bye.
tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.